Extending his arm toward Felicia, Little John smiled and said, "Let's go to the dining hall and see what kind of dinner the robots have prepared for us." Integration. For 3 days, Brad introduced the members of the ground team to Minx and the Gamins. The aliens seemed to accept the humans without much of a problem, but were startled by the robots. "Monsters," said Lynn, the moment he saw a trio of robots marching down the hillside toward the village. "No," said Brad, "not monsters. Helpers. Workers. They will help to build the new village." Lynn stared at the robots. Nx came up beside him. "If Brad says they are helpers, then there is nothing to fear," Nx said. Without taking his eyes off the advancing trio of robots, Lynn asked, "Brad, are they truly helpers?" "Truly," said Brad. "They will work very hard and help us to build the new village." And Brad remembered that the very word robot meant worker in some long-forgotten Middle European language. Work on the new village proceeded smoothly enough. Although many of the gamins obviously felt uneasy about the robots, they soon saw that the machines were doing the work of many men. The new village took form on the far side of the farmland, while most of the gamins busied themselves plowing new fields and seeding them with food crops. Felicia worked with the bio team, of course, which kept her separated from Brad most of each day. They scoured the meadows outside the village's hollow for the remains of the egg-shaped spacecraft that had transported the big cats from Planet Beta. Over dinner, Felicia told Brad, "The eggshell material is decomposing rapidly. We've had to place samples in a vacuum chamber to keep them from disintegrating entirely." Brad looked up from the soup he was spooning. "Like they're programmed to crumble and fall apart," he mused. "Just like the cats themselves were programmed to die once they've killed off the gamins." "The engineers up in the ship are stumped," Felicia said. "They can't find any trace of controls or mechanical devices in the pieces we've recovered. Yet those eggs flew from one planet to the other. They were designed to make the crossing."
"Designed by whom?"
Felicia asked, her face looking troubled.
"And why?"
Brad shook his head. "I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever be able to find out.
It's spooky."
Reaching for his glass of water, Brad agreed. "It's weird. Scary, really." Late one afternoon, as Brad and Minx surveyed the progress on the new village, Brad asked the gamin, "You said that once there were many villages."
"Long ago," said Minx. "Big villages. Much bigger than ours. Even bigger than ours with the new village added."
"Where were they?"
Minx raised an arm and swept the horizon. "Everywhere. The land was filled with them."
He hesitated, then added, "But the Sky Masters destroyed them all." Squinting through the bright sunshine at the ridgeline circling the hollow, Brad pressed, "Do you know where one of these large villages stood? Were any of them near here?"
Minx was silent for several heartbeats. Then, "The largest was where two rivers met at a waterfall."
"Really?"
"That is what Dern told us when he was our rememberer. Two rivers met at a waterfall."
Discoveries. In the single room he shared with his wife, Brad sat at the built-in desk and stared at the 3D map. The image moved slowly, tracing a river as it weaved through forests and grassland. "Minx said the city was located where two rivers met at a waterfall," he murmured. MC's voice replied, "We're coming to that point." Sizable rivers were rare on Gamma, Brad had discovered. The surveillance satellites orbiting the planet had found only a handful.
"There," said MC, "there is where the two rivers join."
Pointing, Brad said, "And there's the waterfall, just below their juncture."
"But no trace of a city," MC said.
The area on both sides of the newly joined river was a strip of grassy plain. Further back from the river's edge, a thick forest covered the ground. "Ground-penetrating radar hasn't detected anything?" Brad asked.
"Nothing," MC replied.
"And this is the only place on the planet where two rivers join, with a waterfall just after their juncture."
Felicia burst into the room. "We found it! We found the control system for the eggs! It's fantastic!"
Looking up, Brad saw that she was all smiles. Felicia practically danced across the little room and sat herself on Brad's lap.
"It's incredible," she said, her voice brimming with excitement. "The whole system is microscopic, built right into the eggshell itself. The entire shell is laced with nanometer-sized control units."
She kissed Brad soundly, then jumped to her feet again and tugged on his arm.
"Come on! The whole bio team is celebrating over in the dining hall."
Brad rose slowly, turned back to the holographic display, and instructed MC, "Scan the area again. Highest power with the ground-penetrating radar." With a glance at Felicia's happy face, he added, "I'll be back in a couple of hours, I guess." MC's image took form in the holo tank. "Very well." Brad thought of a line from 1001 Nights, "Hearkening and obedience." Even the normally cool Dr. Steiner was beaming happily as she sat at the head of a table filled with nearly a dozen of the people of her biology team. They had pushed two ordinary tables together and were celebrating with fruit juices from the dining hall's galley. Brad thought that perhaps the juice glasses had been reinforced with something stronger, but he quickly realized that the biologists didn't need alcohol. They were high on their discovery. As he and Felicia pulled up a pair of chairs from one of the unoccupied tables, Brad saw that Professor Kossoff's image filled the dining hall's display screen, hovering above all the others, twice as large as life, smiling benignly through his beard. "Nanomachines built into the shell of the vehicles," Kossoff was saying. "Incredible."
"But true," said Steiner.
Her blonde hair, usually tied into a prim coil, hung loosely past her shoulders.
"We only have a fragment of the shell, of course, but it's indisputable. The shell structure is laced with nanometer-sized electronic units."
Beaming like a proud father, Kossoff said, "The engineering staff up here is trying to understand how the system works." Steiner stiffened slightly.
"I doubt that we have a large enough sample to provide enough evidence for that."
Kossoff waved a hand in the air. "You know, engineers, they'll chew on what you've provided them like dogs gnawing on a bone."
"Maybe we can find more fragments of the shells," Felicia said, "before they disintegrate entirely."
Kossoff nodded. Steiner looked doubtful. The celebration lasted through the normal dinner hour and well into the night. Littlejohn and several of the anthropologists joined the festivities, as well as a handful of the planetologists. Brad tried to get into the happy mood of it all, but the fact that MC couldn't find any trace of a city kept nagging at him. "It's got to be there," he kept telling himself. "If it's not, then everything that Nx and his people believe is nothing but a fairy tale." The rest of the ground crew trickled in and joined the festivities. Laughter and increasingly raucous jokes filled the dining hall. Brad sat through it all, feeling like an outsider, but happy for Felicia. This is her night, he told himself time and again. At last the party started to break up, and he and Felicia said goodnight to Steiner and the others. It was deep night outside. The camp was lit only by low-intensity lamps on the ground outside each building. They could see the stars crowding the black sky above.
"Which one is the sun?" Felicia asked, her voice suddenly wistful.
Brad shook his head. "Too dim to make out from here."
"It's far away."
200 and some light years, said Brad.
"Far away," she repeated.
Unbidden, the lines from an old poem popped into Brad's consciousness. He recited, "Ah, love, let us be true to one another, for the world which seems to lie before us like a land of dreams, so various, so beautiful, so new, hath really neither joy nor love nor light, nor certitude, nor peace, nor help for pain. And we are here as on a darkling plain, swept with confused alarms of struggle and flight, where ignorant armies clash by night." Felicia stared at him.
"Ignorant armies. That's what we are, aren't we?"
"Our job is to beat back the ignorance," said Brad. "To learn, to understand."
"I suppose so."
"It is," he said, with absolute certainty. But Felicia whispered,
"We're a long way from home, aren't we?"
Brad slid his arms around her. "Wherever you are is home, Phil." She nestled her head against his shoulder.
"That's very sweet of you."
Arms wrapped around each other, they headed for their quarters. Neither of them noticed a meteor streak across the sky and disappear in an eye blink.
Excavation.
When they entered their room, MC's image was smiling in the holographic display. Somehow the computer's avatar looked pleased. Brad felt weary, depressed after the high spirits of the bio team's long celebration. "Found anything?" he asked, steeling himself against the negative reply. Instead, MC said, "Not much." Every nerve in Brad's body quivered like a violin's strings. "Something?" The 3D viewer showed a black-and-white radar return. Brad saw the faint outline of a square structure in the middle of the display, a corner jutting out from the edge of the forest. "At the highest resolving power," MC answered, "the ground-penetrating radar obtained this image. It appears to be a structure of some sort buried under 20 meters of alluvial silt." Staring at the display, Brad asked, "A structure?" "Apparently," was MC's bland reply. Felicia came up beside Brad. "A city?" Trying to rein in his hopes, Brad said, "Maybe, maybe not. Let's see what Little John thinks." He put a call through to Little John, but the head of the anthropology team refused to let himself be seen. He replied to Brad's call with audio only. "It's awfully light," the anthropologist's voice complained. Trying to keep his enthusiasm under control, Brad said, "I think we might have found the ancient city the Gamans have told me about." "Can't it wait until tomorrow?" "But this could prove that the Gamans' story about their past isn't mythology. It's real." "That would be fine, Brad." Little John's voice sounded guarded rather than tired. "Come to my office first thing tomorrow. Or rather at 1000 hours. It's already past midnight." 1000 hours, Brad repeated, feeling sour, almost angry. "Good night," said Little John. Brad turned to Felicia. "You'd think he'd be more excited. After all..." Smiling knowingly, Felicia interrupted, "Brad, hasn't it occurred to you that he might not be alone? Little John?" "He's still celebrating," said Felicia. "But this is important," Brad insisted. With a shake of her head, Felicia said, "If what you found is a city, it's been waiting there for more than 100,000 years. A few more hours won't hurt anything." "Maybe," Brad agreed, very reluctantly. Precisely at 1000 hours, Brad rapped impatiently on Little John's office door. Within half an hour, the anthropologist had called in the rest of the anthro team and put through a call to Kossoff. "It does look artificial," Kossoff's 3D image admitted cautiously. "It's buried under 20 meters of silt," said Brad. "We'll have to build some digging equipment and send it down to you." "Good," Little John said. "If it is the remains of a city buried there, it means that the Gamans' story about the Skymasters isn't entirely mythological." Nodding soberly, Kossoff said, "One step at a time. First, let's see what's under all that mud." "The old village," Nx breathed. Brad thought his tone sounded reverent, even through the computer's translation. The two of them were standing on the edge of a sizable pit that had been dug by the excavating machines that stood bulky and idle, for the moment, on the far side of the hole. In the middle of the man-made crater stood the broken remains of a square stone chimney, at least Brad thought of it as a chimney, poking straight up into the air about 4 meters, leading farther underground. The engineer in charge of the machines came up to Brad. "We can start to dig around the edges of the pit, make it wider, deeper." "Not yet," Brad replied, pointing toward the chimney. "I want to see where it leads first." The engineer, square-jawed, grizzled, broad-shouldered, looked askance. "You intend to go down inside that shaft?" Nodding, Brad answered, "At least a little bit." "I don't think that's wise. The safety people will..." Brad stopped him with an upraised hand. "I want to see where it leads."